B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. And this week, well, we got one of my favorite kind of shows. We're just sort of all over the place. Taylor Zarzer of SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio wraps up our annual panel of guests to chime in with 10 predictive questions for the upcoming season. Also, you'll meet Luis de Jesus of Kickin' Covers here in Charlotte. If you're looking for a really unique gift this holiday season, trust me, this is one you're going to want to pay attention to. But we begin today with a conversation I look forward to every year. I first met Brittany Altomare not long after she graduated from the University of Virginia and was on the Symetra Tour. She was my pro-am partner for a couple of years at the event out at Raintree, and we've remained friends ever since. She finished second in a playoff for a major championship in 2017 and contended in this year's Women's British Open as well. Recently, she finished second at the event in Shanghai, and we caught up earlier this week.
Britt, this was what, now your third full year on tour?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you could go back... Let's go back 3 years, and you could talk to rookie Brittany Altomare, fresh off the Symetra Tour. What would be the most important thing you could tell her?
Let's see. Probably to ask around more about caddies.
Now, what's the story there?
Do some better research on caddies before you hire them.
Oh, my gosh. You are such a professional golfer now. No professional golfer has ever blamed themselves for anything. It's always whoever is toting the bag. You are such a pro golfer now. Oh, my gosh.
No, they're your biggest expense all year. Like, they're the people that could, you're with them all the time. Like, from breakfast to practice to playing to lunch. I mean, you spend so much time with this person. Like, I spend more time with them throughout the year than I do like my own boyfriend.
So to you, what's the most important thing about a caddy? What to you makes a caddy a great caddy or a caddy you would like to work with?
One that just shows up to work on time and just like wanting to work, like wanting to be there, wanting to just, you know, be at the golf course and be present. And I think that's the most important thing to me, definitely showing up on time and being in a good mood, you know, like even when we're playing bad or playing well, just kind of being Mr. or Mrs. Steady Eddie out there, I think is super important to me. So.
Well, I think, you know, part of a caddy's job is part psychologist. And,
right.
You know, if you're having a bad day, the last thing you need is negative Nelly there on the bag. You know, just right. Be nice to look over some guy and say, hey, look, I think you're great and we're just having a bad day. Let's just get out of this and go get a burger.
Exactly. And just be the person you can just lean on. So instead of, like, you know, ending up shooting four over, you can turn that four over into, like, even par. And still be in the tournament. And I think that's where the caddies can help you the most is when you're struggling. Because when you're playing well, like anybody can caddy for anybody when they're like on their game. I mean, it's super easy.
Right.
You just kind of let them do their thing. It's just when you're not playing well, it's a good caddy just kind of like reins you in and just, you know.
Well, yeah. Look, if you can turn a 75 into a 72, you just never know what those three strokes are going to mean 2 days later, right?
Exactly. So I think that's probably what I would tell myself.
Brittany Altomare is on the LPGA Tour. She's our guest taking dead aim. All right, this many years into it, what's the best thing, the absolute best thing about being a professional golfer?
I think like all the people I get to meet around the world. I mean, I get to travel to some pretty cool places and see some pretty cool things. And, yeah, I have friends and, you know, people, host families, people from pro-ams like yourself that I've met like all over the world, and I just think that that's so cool.
I know that you have an affinity for the Far East. You've always told me you love going out to Asia. And in fact, you dang near won a tournament out there this year. What is it about Asia that you love so much? Because you really do seem to perform better when you're out there than just about anywhere else.
I mean, they're kind of bonus tournaments. You know, you play well throughout the year and you get into these limited field, no cut events. So they're a little bit more stress-free and you're just kind of there. I mean, you still want to win, obviously, and you're still practicing and getting ready for your tournament, but it's just a little bit more stress-free. Like, you don't have many worries. Like, the tour does all your flights, and they do your hotels, and you kind of just show up, and you just play golf, and it's nice.
Is there a place in particular in the Far East you love more? I mean, I know you almost won out in Shanghai, but you've performed well at other places. Is there a country, Thailand, or someplace that each year you go, man, I really can't wait to get there. I just love the place.
Yeah, I really like Shanghai. Obviously, this year the city is so cool. I think my favorite, though, even though I haven't played the greatest there, is Japan. I love the people. I love the food. I love going to Japan. But we went to Kyoto this year, and that city is awesome. So I definitely recommend it.
You know, one thing I want to ask you, and I've talked with Ron Cyrak many times about this, and that is how big a deal women's professional golf, the LPGA, is in the Far East as compared to what it is here in America. Can you describe culturally what it's like to be over there and to be a women's professional golfer, how cool it is?
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, the crowds there are so great. And to be like a Korean, like a really good, like NG or Soyeon playing in Korea, it must be so cool because they are like Tiger Woods, like they are celebrities over there, and it's pretty cool to see. And like the crowds that we get in Korea and Taiwan and Japan, they're huge. And I personally love playing in front of big crowds. It's so much fun. I think that's why I play well in Arkansas when we have big crowds there, and I play well in Asia just because it's a lot of fun when you have people out there just cheering you on, and they're so nice over there. And they just love women's golf, which is awesome.
You mentioned some of the South Korean golfers and how popular they are in their home country. Mm-hmm. Is it a weird culture shock for them to go from that celebrity status and then to fly over here and just sort of blend in? Is it something they welcome? Is it something they enjoy? Or is it just weird?
I don't really know how they feel, but I do know that they assimilate over here really well. I mean, they really try. You know, their English is probably better than most Americans. Like I feel like they do a really good job on trying to like embrace the American culture. And a lot of them live over here, you know, when they're trying to get ready to play golf and their coaches are over here and stuff. And I think they do really like being in America. But when they go to Korea, I mean, it's just, fans are crazy for them. So.
Brittany Altomare is on the LPGA. She's our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, we've talked about what the greatest thing about being a professional golfer is. What is a number one, top of the list, worst thing about being a women's professional golfer?
Ooh, I don't really know. I think just the whole caddy thing was a shock to me. I don't think it's the worst thing. I just think it was a learning curve for me. And I feel like everybody goes through it. Especially when they reach this level, you know, it's kind of learning to deal with employees. And, you know, I've never had to do that. I don't know any like 25-year-olds that have to deal with employees.
Right.
But it's definitely a learning curve. And I think I understand it a lot better and how to work with somebody. And so I think it wasn't my favorite part, but I'm getting better at it.
You know, you mentioned travel, and you travel all over the world, and I don't think a week goes by that I don't see a message on Twitter from either a men's or women's professional golfer griping about some travel nightmare in their clubs getting lost. Have you had a travel nightmare like that? Am I jinxing you by even bringing it up?
I think you're jinxing me because I haven't, I mean, knock on wood, please. I've never, like, had my clubs lost. They've been delayed coming in on, like, the next flight or something, but nothing like some of my friends have gone through. I've been lucky so far.
So this next year, when Brittany cusses me out on social media, you'll know what it's about.
Yes.
Brittany Altamare is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. She's on the LPGA Tour. Hey, look, when I first met you, you know, there was just you, and you had a coach. But now I look online and you've got a whole team now. I guess everybody does to some extent. But who all is on Team Brittany? Who all is standing behind you?
I have the same two coaches still, Justin Sheehan. He's my like swing coach, short game coach. And then I have my aim point putting coach, Mark Sweeney. I've been with him since college. He's probably the longest coach I've ever had. I think this might be our eighth year coming up together.
Yeah.
And then I started training at Diesel Fitness in Tampa. They're great. My body has felt the best it's ever felt. And it's cool. It's a different setting for me. They do a lot of MLB players. And this year, for some reason, the trainer there has decided to throw me in with them. So, like, it's been a shock. But I think it's really good to step out of your comfort zone. It's been a lot of fun. Different, but fun.
Every baseball player I've ever come across at the major league level thinks that they could go on and be a professional golfer. How many of those guys that you're working out with have hit you up for tips?
A lot of them.
That does not surprise me at all.
I actually brought in like 10 dozen golf balls because I had so many of them.
Yeah.
And literally, they were gone. I went to the bathroom. Like, I set them down on the counter, went to the bathroom, and there was, like, two boxes left. I'm like, oh, my God, where did they go?
That's so great. Brittany, do you still love the game? I mean, do you still love to play, even though you have to spend so much of your life doing it?
Yes. Actually, this year, at the end of the season, like, when we got to Asia, last year I kind of felt pretty drained. It was my first season where I went all the way through to CME last year, and so I was a little drained and tired in my first 4 weeks in Asia, and this year I felt way better. Like, I was ready to go when we got to Asia, and even at CME, like, I felt ready to play, and I'm hoping to, like, continue that because I like that feeling. I don't like getting to a tournament and not feeling ready. I don't know.
Yeah, no, who would? Now, is that something that just takes a couple of years to sort of figure out in terms of your pacing and, you know, how many weeks you can be out there and when you need to take time off and when you're off, you know, really taking time off and adjusting your training? Is that just something that just you have to go through it a couple times before you figure it out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I tried to figure it out on Symetra, but it's different.
That's like a different travel, animal. Yeah.
Yeah. The travel is just different. I mean, Symetra, you know, it's just throughout the U.S., whereas the LPGA, I mean, we went to like 14 different countries or something crazy like that this year. And I just think, you know, knowing your limit, like I can only do 3 in a row, or I can only do 4 in a row, and then I like need to take a week off, and setting your schedule. I think I did a lot of better job of that this year, and hopefully I can continue to do that this year. So I feel ready to go by November, or still ready to go in November.
Yeah. So. How long have you been quote unquote done now? I mean, since your last tournament, how many weeks?
I think that this is the fourth week we've been out.
Yeah.
We ended the week before Thanksgiving, so I think it's been 4 weeks.
All right. Now, I assume that when you get off the plane from that last tournament, I mean, you get to the house, you throw your clubs in the closet, and you have absolutely no intention of ever touching them again. How long is it until you actually open that closet?
I'm actually probably going to start next week. I told myself I'd take 4 weeks off, so this is the fourth week. So I think I'm going to, when I get back from my little trip, I'll probably just start practicing again.
Now, do you feel guilty at any point? I mean, do you feel like, oh God, I need to go hit balls, I need to go do this, or are you just like, no, I don't?
No, I know.
So as much as you love golfing, you still love to play, you have no problem whatsoever for walking away for a month?
No, because I know that my body and like my mind need it. If I want to play to the best of my ability, like the whole entire year, I feel like I just need it. So I feel like it's actually part of my training, per se, is like taking time off. But I'm also working out like almost every day. So it's not like I'm doing nothing, you know.
It's not like you're living my life of chips and TV. I get it. Brittany Altomare's on the LPGA Tour. She's our guest, Taking Dead Aim. Each year you've always had one or two things at the end of the year when we've talked that you feel like you really need to focus on to get better. What's something you're going to really work on when you pick up the clubs next week? What's something that you've already said, okay, I need to focus on this?
My wedges. I think that my par 5 scoring average could be better or needs to be better. I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't win in Shanghai was that I just didn't make enough birdies on the par 5s. And I think that I just need more opportunities with my wedges. So I think that's my main focus this off season. And obviously, like, I'm still trying to get a few more yards every year. So I think those two things.
You know, you can be inundated by statistics. I know you have access to an unbelievable amount of data about your golf game. Is that something that can almost be paralyzing because you know too much or you look at too much?
I am not like that. My dad and my coaches are pretty analytical about that stuff, so I kind of just let them look at all of it, and then they tell me what I need to do. But usually, I can feel what I need to do. It's just the statistics are kind of just confirming what I'm feeling. And sometimes there's something that surprises me, and I'm like, oh, that's right. Like, I should work on that. But I've felt that about my par fives and my wedges this year, and the statistics said it, so I feel like I need to do that this year.
I know that you're heading off on a trip soon to Montana, but it leads me to this question. Is it possible to have a real hobby when you're a pro golfer? In other words, when you're not on tour, when you're at home, is there something you like to do just for you, something you enjoy?
I don't really have any hobbies. I've been working out a lot. I don't think that's really a hobby, but I didn't normally like to do it, but now I kind of enjoy going there, so I guess that's my hobby, but I don't really want to consider that a hobby.
I get you out of here on this because I'm such an equipment geek. I know that you are you still with Ping?
Yes.
All right. I know you've been a Ping staff for a while. Is there any testing of equipment that you've been doing, something new from Ping? Are there any? I know that you play a Titleist golf ball, and they probably have sent you the new golf balls already. Is there anything you've sort of been working with already or something you're looking forward to testing? And do you make any changes in your bag throughout the year?
We did a lot of testing last off season, like right after the season we went out to Ping. And I really liked my equipment this year. I do have their new irons that came out in the middle of the summer. I think they're the i210s.
Yeah.
I haven't hit them yet, so I'm kind of looking forward to hitting them and seeing if they're the same, different, worse. Like, I'm not sure, so I'll probably do that in the off season. But that's about it.
She's going to break through. She's too good not to. From the LPGA Tour, that's my friend Brittany Altomare. And when we return, SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio's Taylor Zarzer takes dead aim at the upcoming season on the PGA Tour with his 10 predictive question survey. Presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hey, we're taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. He is the major championship anchor for PGA Tour Radio and the man responsible for this particular host doing this show. So blame him. Always a pleasure to pick the brain of my old friend Taylor Zarzer. Okay, Taylor, last year, the question number one was over under major appearances by Tiger Woods, and I set the number at 1.5. This year, I'm altering it somewhat. Over under tournament wins by Tiger Woods, and I'm still setting the number at 1.5.
I'm going over on that one. If he's healthy for the 2019 season, which I expect, then I think he's going to win more than once. Now, the one thing is, the Tiger Woods of December of 2018, I still think is a very tired Tiger. I think that 2018 took a lot out of him. You know, it was a very different year. He played a normal schedule for the first time in over a decade. And so I do think it took a lot out of him. So I do wonder how fresh he is for the 2019 season. But I think he's going to win a couple times.
I suspect by the time everybody starts to roll into Magnolia Lane, if he's healthy, he's going to be rested and ready, though, don't you?
I think so, yeah. I think that if he is, I still feel that golf course is perfect for him. He's a different kind of player than he was when he was winning at Torrey Pines so many times. I'm not even sure he should play at Torrey, to be honest with you. But I do think that Augusta National is one of the places that he is still a ringer at, even though it's crazy. It's going to be 14 years since he last won there.
Wow. Hey, Taylor, this is sort of a tricky question. More likely to happen, Rory and or Spieth complete the career Grand Slam this year, or neither ever completes it?
That's a good one. I am more confident that Jordan Spieth is going to complete the career Grand Slam than I am Rory. Not because of talent. I think Rory should have a chance to win at Augusta National every year. But I also think that I'm just not so sure that he loves the game of golf as much as he once did. I think that Jordan Spieth is still infuriated by the way that he's been playing the last couple of years, even though he's had a great year by most standards. So I think we're going to see a Jordan Spieth that wins more major championships. And I hope Rory McIlroy does too, because I love Rory, but Rory is a happily married man, and that's great, but I just don't know that we have seen the same kind of conviction out of Rory. If all things are equal, if all players are playing their best, Charlie,
he's the best in the world.
And I love the guy. I mean, he's one of the most approachable people that you'll ever meet. But I haven't seen him seething to be the best in the world. The guy at 2014 at Valhalla, after he won, told me, "This is the most important thing in my life right now, and golf." Now, look, I'm glad that his wife is the most important thing in his life, but also wonder if there's some other things that are ahead of golf going into 2019.
Very well could be. Look, I feel the same way you do. I have never seen anybody who, when they're firing on all cylinders, made the game look as easy as Rory did, because when he's really playing well, he's hitting it a mile down the fairway, and then he's hitting it to 2 inches where you and I could make the putt. I mean, it just the game looks simple. It's like, well, why is he even playing this? So I completely agree. Hey, last year I asked if Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka were more likely to build off of their major championship success and have one of those appearance-chasing fees hangovers that we see so often. But both had really good years. Brooks, a great one. Will both, either one or neither, win a major this year?
I'm going to go neither, just because of how difficult it is to win a major championship would be the reason. But I look forward to us revisiting how wrong I am about this 12 months from now. But I think that the depth of the game is so strong now that I have a hard time guaranteeing anyone or feeling confident. I feel less confident about who is going to win the majors going into 2019 than I can recall, because there's at least a dozen guys, maybe dozens of guys, that are legitimate contenders to win a major championship now. And so that would be the reason. It's not because I expect either one of them to have a poor year. I think that Koepka is going to continue to win regular events, which is good. And I absolutely think Justin Thomas is winning multiple golf tournaments in 2019. But I do. I think that, you know, getting one, getting two in these days is very difficult. So Koepka's already got three, JT's got one, but I think getting any more is going to be increasingly difficult throughout their careers.
Taylor Zarzur is with PGA Tour Radio, SiriusXM, the SEC Network. Basically, he has more business cards than I have socks, and he's our guest taking Dead Aim. I like the venues for the majors this year. Augusta, Bethpage, Pebble Beach, and Royal Portrush, kind of a wild card. Now, do you think that with these venues, we're more likely to see players padding their major championship resumes, or are we going to get first-time winners?
Yeah, I think we're going to get first-time winners, and I don't have any business cards because it would look ridiculous if I tried to put all that on there. Yeah, I think we are. I think we're going to keep getting some more new blood that wins major championships. I wouldn't be surprised if you got someone that has already won a major, that won at Augusta National. Justin Rose would be one of the first names that comes to mind. He's got such a great record there, and the guy has obviously turned a corner. I think Dustin Johnson will be a factor there, as he typically is, and be a factor at Pebble, as he typically is. So I would think that those places, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think Royal Portrush will be set up so that you might see a first-time winner. Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy both being in that place, having gone there, will be one of the craziest environments you've ever seen in golf. Tiger coming to Northern Ireland to play golf there will be a massive story. And that, you know, Rory has often felt like a man without a country just because of all the politics that have gone on in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland. He feels more loved in other parts of the UK, like especially in England, than he does in his own country at times. But even though he lives in Florida, and in very many, and in a lot of ways, Charlie, he's become more comfortable in America than he is anywhere else. And I think a lot of us feel comfortable adopting him as one of our own, except for when the Ryder Cup's on, of course. But I think that week, it'll be a huge home game. So I do. I don't think that he'll play well because of that. And then, PGA being in May at Bethpage, I think it's going to be cold, you know, so that's going to be one thing that's going to be interesting. Just that could be a long golf course, just given the weather. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw someone new win that too.
Taylor, Cameron Champ has kind of fascinated me the first part of the wraparound season. I mean, this guy kills it. He recently won his first event. In winning, he averaged 324 off the tee, but he was near last in the field in fairways hit, but third in greens hit. Now, is this what's wrong with the game of golf, or is this just where it is and we got to live with it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. This is the way we've set up the game. And with all the advancements in technology, why wouldn't you build your game the way that Cameron Champ is building his? So I certainly don't blame him. I know you're not doing that, but I think that, just to make it clear, I think that that's the way you should build your game. I think as you look at Sedgefield, or you look at the golf course in Hartford, what's that, Cromwell, the TPC Hartford course there, some shorter courses, but still you have to hit the ball straight. I love that. I love the more we can require these guys to hit every shot in their bag. I think that people would enjoy that more too. I think that they think they want to see people hit it 350 yards, but I think that they would enjoy watching someone be very creative and have to hit just about every shot in their bag just as much, if not more. And I hope that at some point we have a return to that, because we're running out of property. Jack Nicklaus will be the first to tell you that we can't, there's not enough room in this country to make these golf courses any bigger than they already are, to just make them tougher.
I was going to say, isn't there a lesson learned from this last Ryder Cup? I mean, we don't have to make it the nightmare at Wingfoot, but perhaps if we just adjust one mower length, one notch, yeah, on the mower, to where, you know what, that ball, if it gets to the bottom of that grass, that's not going to be any fun.
Exactly. No, I think that's it. And I do. I would love to see more of that. And I think that those players, Cameron Champ, who's an amazing talent, how he's getting that out of that body is crazy. But I do. You would have to see some adjustments. They're not going to put a governor on the size of the golf, the head of the golf club. I don't think that they're going to make big restrictions to the golf ball. I am interested to see if the Masters has their own ball, has been speculated about, or if, you know, you see a competition golf ball or something like that. But they got to sell things, and people like me want any advantage I can get. Because father time is catching up to me now in my 40s, so I don't think that they're going to make any restrictions on technology.
I hear you. Those back tees at Quail look a lot further than they used to.
Yeah, I don't even look back there anymore.
Taylor Zarzer with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio is our guest taking Dead Aim. Bryson DeChambeau, Ricky Fowler, John Rahm. Those are the only three players currently in the top 10 in the world who have not won a major. Who wins one first? And if I threw in number 11, which is Tommy Fleetwood, would that change your answer?
No, Bryson DeChambeau is going to be my answer.
Mine too.
We were talking about Rory McIlroy saying what he said at Valhalla about golf being the most important thing in my life. I would be interested to know what the second most important thing is in Bryson's life. obviously, he has a passion for all sorts of things that are above my pay grade and science, but it all comes back to him obsessing about the game of golf, and he does. I mean, the man is madly in love with the game, and I think that he is ready to pounce. Ricky winning a major would be one of the more popular wins we've seen in recent memory, and more just as popular with you, me, and the world. I can tell you'd be just at least that popular with everyone on tour. I mean,
yeah.
Everyone's best friend. But he's about to get married. He's got so many great things going on in his life that, you know, I wonder if that maybe prevents him from winning a major. And I do wonder if Ricky's a little too nice to put four great rounds together. Bryson DeChambeau wants to cut your teeth out when he gets out there on the golf course, and so does John Rahm.
Yeah.
But I think DeChambeau is a little bit better at controlling his emotions in majors, or will be at least in 2019, than Rahm is at this point.
Well, you don't win U.S. amateurs without being able to control yourself somewhat. Question number 7. This is one of my favorite annual questions. Yes or no, and you're there for every one of these. Do you think the USGA finds a way to screw up the setup and make themselves once again the story at the U.S. Open?
I don't think so. I don't think they can do that at Pebble Beach. Now, I mean, the one thing would be how fast are the greens, but knowing those people like I do, I'd be shocked if they let that happen at Pebble Beach, just given what happened at Shinnecock. And who cares what the winning score is at Pebble Beach, for crying out loud. You got Tiger Woods coming back, you know, to play at Pebble Beach with a clean bill of health where he's had so much success. You have one of the last, if not the last, chances for Phil Mickelson to win the career Grand Slam, although I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
But we'll see the state of his game in June. And then you got all these young, great names in the game, and you've got one of the most beautiful postcards anywhere on the planet. Just let that be the story. I don't think you need to do anything else. And I think that the USGA gets that.
Taylor, you mentioned Augusta National. Billy Payne is going into the Hall of Fame primarily for his work in growing the game in the last 10 years as the chairman there. However, he made no significant changes to the golf course. That was never going to be a part of his legacy. How much change and how fast do you think we get it with Chairman Ridley? And do you think there's any chance of him rolling back some of the hoodie changes that were so unpopular?
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said about Billy, who deserves all the credit in the world for the advancements we have made with the game of golf. I mean, he does. I mean, what we're doing with the women's tournament there, I think is going to be fantastic to have an amateur event like that at Augusta National. That's just that's an amazing announcement. And, of course, that's happened under Fred's watch. But Billy had a lot to do with it coming, the drive, chip, and putt. All those things are just they're life-changing events for the yes. game of golf. And I think that's fantastic. But there's no question, knowing Fred a little bit like I do, who is a delightful man, I think that he is well aware that the 13th hole, for example, needs to be changed. That's just not a par five for most of the guys playing in the tournament. So I think you'll see a couple of things like that change and very quickly.
Goodness, I wonder if I was the chairman at Augusta National, if I would want that attached to my name. That's such an iconic hole. There's no question that something needs to be done. I just don't know if I would have the stones to step up and put it under my watch.
Yeah, I just don't. I can't think of any other reason why they would buy property behind the 13th tee at Augusta Country Club. So I think that day is coming.
Absolutely. Is there a player you have your eye on this year, like a Cameron Champ, a Sam Burns, an Austin Cook, somebody that you think is ready to take that next step?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I mean, Champ is the guy I think that all of us have identified. I know a couple years ago I told you about Matt Fitzpatrick, and I still think, by the way, that he's headed towards a lot of success in his future, and he's already been in a Ryder Cup, and I know he was disappointed to miss it this past year. And he's still, I think, a guy you're going to hear from when it comes to major championships. You know, that's interesting. There's a couple of different guys that I've had my eye on, but I don't know that they're ready to compete at that high a level. Sam Burns is one that you just threw out that I think has a real chance to win on the PGA Tour in 2019. Terrific player out of LSU. And has already been successful on the Web.com Tour. Seemed to be comfortable playing in a final group at the Honda Classic with Tiger Woods. So if I'm allowed, Charlie, I'm going to go with Sam Burns as that guy in 2019.
Sounds good. Taylor Zarzur with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, our guest taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions. Get you out of here on this one. Your surprise or gut prediction about anything in the world of golf in 2019? And I hasten to point out that you've been scary good with this question over the years.
The surprise for 2019 in the professional game of golf, I'm going to say that Tiger Woods. Well, can that count as a surprise if Tiger wins a major?
Well, yeah. Considering a year ago we were surprised he was walking. Yes,
I think he's going to win the Masters, Charlie. I know that a lot. He's already the betting favorite, or I guess now he's fallen to one of the betting favorites. But I think that everything that's happening with him right now is geared around him peaking at Augusta National. Now that he has seen himself play a full year and seen how much desperately he wanted to get back and gain on it and gain on it and gain on it, then he just wanted to win some tournament, which he obviously ended up winning the Tour Championship, and that was an amazing scene. I think now that he's proven that to himself, I think it's back to major championship mode. And I think that you're going to see a guy that's very smart with his schedule in the next couple of months. Don't be surprised if he plays in Maui. Don't be surprised if he doesn't play in the Honda Classic or he doesn't play at Bay Hill. He obviously is going to play at Riviera because he's part of that tournament and putting it on, even though he does not play well there. But I think he's going to manage his schedule and he's going to pick his starts so that he is fresh for Augusta National. And I'm telling you, if he wins that tournament, you could argue that it would be the biggest story we've ever seen in golf. That a guy that 11 years after his last major win, after all the self-inflicted pain he has caused himself, to come back and to win the Masters 14 years after his last Masters victory, 11 years after his last major win, would be unlike a story we've ever seen. What Ben Hogan came back from in order to be a major championship winner again, it's certainly more physical than any player has ever endured. But given what Tiger Woods has put himself through, more importantly, mentally and physically, in the last decade or so, for him to come back and win this, I think it really might be unparalleled in the game in terms of that big of a story. So I think there is a real chance it's going to happen.
He's one of the most versatile sports broadcasters around, but I think his passion and calling, in my opinion, is the game of golf. From SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio, that's Taylor Zarzer. And up next, you'll meet Luis De Jesus of Kick and Covers here in Charlotte as he takes dead aim at his creation. One of the most unique golf gifts this holiday season, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Okay, so I'm sitting around Thanksgiving that weekend with my son, and a commercial for Etsy comes on. I've never seen Etsy before in my life, didn't know what it was, but it said it had gifts for everyone, and it looked like a girly commercial. So I said, oh, really? Let's see this. So I go to Etsy.com, I punch in golf, and all of a sudden, I come across a couple of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life. We are putter head cover junkies, and there is a head cover that, hand to God, looks like a Chuck Taylor basketball shoe. A Converse Chuck Taylor. I went, no way is this for real. And that's how I came into contact with this guy, Luis De Jesus. Luis, I ordered one. It came to the house. It is truly amazing. When did you start doing these?
I actually started these in about 2010, around there.
What was the inspiration? What made you think, I don't know, basketball shoes for putter covers?
You know, actually, I saw it somewhere in Arizona. Some guy actually had his daughter's, like, ballet slipper as a putter cover.
Oh, how great.
And obviously, I wasn't going to go with the ballet slipper, but, you know, I'm a big fan of Jordan's, a bit of a sneakerhead, I guess you could say, and I decided to try to do a Jordan, and then just from playing golf and kind of going from Arizona to Connecticut, where I'm originally from, I had a lot of interest and sold one or two. Two became 10, 10 became 50, and it kind of grew from there.
If you will go, now you don't have a website per se, but your stuff is available on Etsy, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Etsy's the only kind of online ordering system that I use. If it's not that, then I kind of just happen to run into people and kind of sell it out of the trunk, I guess you can say.
It's called Kick and Covers. I invite you to go to Etsy and check it out. And he says, okay, Jordans. There's like a whole bunch of different Jordans that he has. I ordered the one that is the Converse Chuck Taylor knockoff, and it's amazing. How did you have a lot of hoops to go through as far as getting the rights from Nike to do the Jordan or getting the rights from Converse to do the Chuck Taylor?
No, actually, these are all legit shoes. They're purchased as a Tava shoe, and they're directly from Converse, from Nike, and they're just, I purchased them and converted them to a putter cover, so this is a legit thing.
I didn't know they made them that small.
Oh, yeah. You'd be surprised.
So, once you started doing this, how many do you think you've sold between then and now?
I think I've had over 250 or so orders on Etsy, and I would probably say another 200 to 300, just kind of word of mouth and seeing people in various clubs that I had worked at before.
Luis De Jesus is with Kick and Covers. Ironically enough, based here in Charlotte, he's our guest taking dead aim. Fascinating. If you go to Etsy.com again and look at these putter covers, how many have you sold when you're just out there playing golf and all of a sudden a dude sees you leaning up against your putter and your putter has a Jordan on the end of it?
I mean, that's such a big portion of sales, just, you know, kind of hanging out on the green, and if I'm done putting or waiting to grab the flag and I have my putter in hand, there's a nice Jordan sitting on the green, and people are kind of in shock and awe when they see it, and you know, 9 times out of 10 they have to have one. So it's definitely the best form of advertisement I've had.
Now, Luis, you say that you actually order the toddler shoe and then convert it post. What does that conversion process consist of?
It's just a lot of it is just securing an inner liner. That's kind of where I differentiate myself from just throwing on a normal kind of toddler shoe on a putter. I create that inner liner. It secures the shoe onto the putter head a lot better. From testing, it lasts longer. just by having that inner liner, and you know, it prevents any type of slippage and kind of losing the head cover. But yeah, a lot of it's just that inner liner, then kind of getting it all put together, accessorizing where I can with the laces or different color socks, and then creating something custom that's going to be something special for somebody.
I'm sure that you get requests for things. What is a wild request or color combination that you've been asked to try to do?
I had a guy who wanted something completely neon. He wanted the Nike, I guess they're running shoes. They have a lot of running shoes that are this extremely bright highlighter type yellow, and he wanted that top to bottom. I did come across a pair. It was hard to find, but I did that, and I was able to find some neon laces, and I got as close as I could. But bright neon highlighter yellow was definitely the weirdest request.
Luis de Jesus with Kickin' Covers. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. I invite you to look at all of his stuff on Etsy. Now, as we record this conversation, we're about 2 weeks out from Christmas. If someone was to go on Etsy right now, would they still be able to get it in time?
No doubt. I'm taking Christmas orders up until the 18th. I use USPS priority shipping, so it's 2 to 3 days. So if we can get them in by the 18th, I will have it to you by Christmas. Without question. So I've been pretty much catching up with all the inventory I had and trying to have it all done before the orders come in. So it's a very short turnaround right now.
Now, Luis, I know that you do you know, the tennis shoes, the basketball shoes, and you said you mentioned you did the running shoe. Your inspiration was a ballet slipper. Have you had some requests for things that are sort of outside the athletic norm?
I had a guy who's a construction worker, and he asked for a work boot, which I thought was kind of cool. Actually, a player on the hockey team asked for a toddler skate, which I thought was a little dangerous, but they have them. I didn't think I would be able to find a hockey skate that small, but I did. So that was another really interesting one that's out there. I had a request for a dress loafer, which was also very interesting to find and create. But it's crazy what they make for toddlers nowadays and how you can accessorize. But they were all out there, and I would say those are probably the three that were outside of the sports world that were just a little bit different.
Don't you sort of scratch your head at the notion that someone would make a work boot for a toddler?
I mean, child labor laws, there's got to be something against that, you know?
That's what I was thinking.
But, yeah, you know, they have them out there. I mean, I guess just to maybe match up with dad or mom, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, well, I'm surprised every time I look for a special order what I can find online.
I was going to ask you, do you search online with shoe companies, or do you actually get on the phone? Because I think these would be fascinating conversations when you call, you know, Red Wing Boots and say, hey, you got something in a toddler.
Yeah. No, I keep it usually to internet and outlet stores, and kind of I always look anytime I'm out and about, and if I see something that I think might sell or could be a little interesting, I try to scoop it up and have it, you know, just kind of for at once occasion where someone might ask for something crazy. But it hasn't happened too often. Usually the Jordans, the Converse, and kind of your typical basketball or tennis shoe covers most of the demographic.
Luis de Jesus is with Kickin' Covers. Check out his work at Etsy.com. Go to golf and go to Golf Head Covers. You'll see them. You'll be ordering one tomorrow, I promise, for Christmas. Just for giggles, since you got your start doing the Jordans, knowing what a golf freak Mike is, have you sent one to the Hornets front office just to see if there's a reaction?
I actually know someone in the front office. And that is currently in the works to get one to his airness to see what he thinks.
Oh, I guarantee you he will be all about them. Luis, have you had a situation where someone's made a request and you just hadn't been able to fulfill it because you hadn't found the shoe?
Not as of yet. I mean, I would say the only thing is that obviously the Jordan brand and Nike brand, they make some very special edition type shoes, and they're just not available in that small of a size. So there are some shoes out there, obviously, in the sneaker world that, you know, they only make such a small run of them, and they're just not available in a children's size. They're usually just, you know, done for adults only or men only or whatever it is. So there are some special edition shoes, I would say, that are just, I don't think I'll ever be able to find.
Which were you more surprised that you were able to find, the work boot or the loafer?
The work boot, without question. I figured maybe, you know, some kids, either toddlers in weddings or something, you know, maybe a loafer or a dress shoe is possible, but I didn't think a work boot would be in the mix, but it was.
Again, you've got to check out Luis's work. He can do it for you in time for Christmas. The company is called Kickin' Covers. Ironically, it's here in Charlotte. But if you want to see, if you want to order, he uses the Etsy portal. So go to Etsy.com and then search golf head covers. I promise you'll run into them. It's head covers that look like Air Jordan shoes. I've got the one that's a Converse Chuck Taylor All-Star. They are incredible. You will order them tomorrow. Luis, thank you so much for your time, and Merry Christmas, and I love your product.
Thank you very much for having me, Chuck. I greatly appreciate the opportunity.
Again, go to Etsy.com, that's ETSY.com, and search golf head covers. Anybody that uses a putter will totally dig what Kickin' Covers has to offer. That's creator Luis De Jesus. I'd also like to thank SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio's Taylor Zarzer and the LPGA Tour's Brittany Altomare for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts and anywhere else. We're on Spotify and Google Play. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can do it. Just search Taking Dead Aim. It'll automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. On the page right now, links to stories about Q School bad beats, what players spent their first big paychecks on, and a snub, a perceived snub, of Brooks Koepka by ESPN, and so much more. Hey, weatherwise for the weekend, for the first time in forever, it seems, you should be able to find time to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart whichever day you wish. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.